Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. My guest today is Heather Ogden. She's a fresh new voice in young adult fiction with a love for fantasy and magical realism. Heather has crafted a debut novel that captures the imagination of today's teens. It's called The Betrayal. It's the first in a planned series of The Lies We Fear, and it blends her fascination with mysterious magic and her gift for storytelling into a page-turner that's both thrilling and thought-provoking. The Betrayal is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, and all the usual places. And for everything about the book, go to theliesweFear.com and follow her on Instagram and X. And Heather, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
So this is your first book, and I'm always delighted to talk to first-time authors because it's one thing if you've written five books, whether it's nonfiction or fiction, but when you write your first book, there's a process you go through, there's a trial and tribulation you go through, and there's a lot of enjoyment as well. So tell us from your perspective as a very young author, and then we'll talk about your book and the plot as well, but what was your experience writing this first book in terms of maybe the process of how you sat down to write? Was it once a day, every day, 2 hours a day, or when it struck you, or how that worked? And also, what were some of the challenges?
Yeah, so the original idea for The Lies We Fear came about in high school, actually, for me. We had just gotten done reading 1984. It was a book I remember. Yeah. I did not like it very well, not in high school at very least, but I had a really strange dream about it, which was The Lies We Fear. And I started writing it in screenplay format at first, because that's what I originally started writing in. Come to college, I've slowly transitioned into a novel format, because I realized that getting into the film industry was a lot harder than getting into the book industry. So I got in touch with David Hancock, the founder of Morgan James, and out of pure interest, hoping for advice, asked what he thought of it. And he looked it over and said, "Heather, this is amazing. I'm going to submit it to the board on your behalf. Give me your address." And I
press it.
Was just shocked.
Was it a cold call to him in terms of, would you look
at? So I had gotten a connection. My mother's friend had recently published a book, and they were meeting up for coffee, and I got invited home for a semester, and we just got to talking, and I told her that I was writing a book, and she was like, "Oh, let me introduce you." And then we just started chatting.
Serendipity, I see. Yeah.
Well,
the fact that he took the time to look it over and actually be impressed and bring it to the company and say, "Hey, look, here's something we want to do." Where did you get that spark for writing to begin with? You mentioned about starting it as a screenplay, the book, and we're going to talk about the plot in a minute or two. But I'm still intrigued by how you approached all of this. So you were interested in writing, I guess, at an early age, but you're still at an early age. So when did you decide to start writing on a regular basis?
So I had decided I was in seventh grade, and I really wanted to be a YouTuber when I grew up. That's what I wanted to,
well, everybody
to be.
Wants to be a YouTuber. Of course, Heather. That's everybody's goal. It's either that or a surgeon.
But my mother beautifully told me that if I wanted to post anything, that I had to write a script and I had to give it to her for her to approve of. And she had looked through it. And I remember the first time I wrote, I think I wrote 100 pages in about an hour or two. And she looked at it and she went, "You know, not everyone can do this, right?" And I go, no, you're just kidding me. Everyone can write. Everyone hears voices in their heads talking to them.
Well, they do, but they can't necessarily get it on paper.
Yeah. And I kept writing, thinking, you know, everyone can do this. And I kept with it.
I like the concept because you just assume everybody could do it. So you did it. You didn't form any writer's block or anything.
Yeah,
kind of
not at that time. No.
Oh, now you're getting it.
Well, I did get it in high school. And it was one of those times I got really worried. It's about sophomore year. I got in a writer's block on one of the works I was working on. and I just couldn't move forward. And I stopped writing entirely for about a year. And that's I was worried.
Yeah,
I was really worried that it was just going to be like writing would be a passing phase and I wouldn't get back into it. But I managed to steer myself off into a different story and just got back into it immediately.
That's an interesting concept of not having writer's block, having writer's block, and then going back and writing again. I have a great idea for you, which is to, especially for young fiction, which is what this is if you can get a bunch of your fellow young writers together and live on a block, it would be a writer's block. And then if you had a block on writing, you could go down the block to another writer and get it unblocked. Would that work?
Oh, yeah. Well, I currently, when I get stuck in a writer's block, on either the current series I'm working on or other short pieces, I usually end up going to my fiance and I just bounce ideas off of him. And he keeps me going straight.
Very good. Well, let's reverse the approach because as I mentioned in the introduction, this book, which is called The Betrayal, is part of a series, The Lies We Fear. So let's start from the general and then go to the specific meaning. Why did you come up with the idea of the series? And then we'll get to the actual book, The Betrayal.
So I came up with the series because there was just so much I had wanted in the book. And I realized it couldn't be one book, not with all the detail that I had in mind. And then going into further on that, I wanted it to be a trilogy. And it's no longer a trilogy.
What is it?
It's a 4-book series now. I don't know what those are called.
I think it's called the Trilogy Plus.
Maybe.
I just made that up, but I think it could work for you. So look at
yeah.
When you finish the first book, and again, it's called The Betrayal, and I want to talk to you about the plot in a minute. Did you share it with your mother as you did your earlier writing, and what was her reaction?
So that one I had not actually shared with my mother because that was when I had kind of dropped the YouTube dream.
Okay.
I was just continuing to write. I remember the first ever instance of the story. Funny enough, I started writing October 6th, 2016.
Mm-hmm.
It's nearly almost exact.
Yeah.
Which I always found hilarious. And it has evolved so much over time. Character names have changed. Where the plot's going to go has changed over time. Just with how I've grown.
Well, when you look at it that way and you want to do it as a trilogy plus, if it took you that long to do the first one, do you think the second, third, and fourth would take you less time? Because that's a long time to devote.
Oh, yes.
A 1 month.
So the first book, when I had submitted it to David, I had 4 chapters submitted to him. I had 6 in total. After submitting it, I wrote 34 chapters within a week.
Amazing.
Well, I got paranoid.
Oh, you have the energy too, which is great. I'm sure you had the story outline as well to give.
Yes.
David as well. Well, tell us a little bit about the novel itself. I usually have mostly nonfiction writers on, but the idea of you writing as a young author and young fiction as well, how do you work that so that even though it's fiction, but it's still tuned into what you feel your generation would appreciate and understand?
I just tune into entertainment. I write to entertain. That has been my passion and my love since I started writing. I think that that's what my generation just genuinely wants is just genuine forms of entertainment. Nothing, because it feels like most things now are attempting to cater to something that we don't really want.
Sure.
Ignoring what we want.
So in other words, forget the ideology, forget the narrative. You want to write pure entertainment. And has the feedback from your generation and others as well, adults that read it, has the feedback been that you've accomplished that mission, that this book is entertaining first and foremost?
Oh, yeah. From what I've seen, definitely.
Okay. Now we've got to the point which I kept promising you I would bring you to, which is the plot itself. So tell us about what this book is. Again, it's called The Betrayal.
So The Betrayal is about a young girl named Angelette Arabella who finds out that her father is not only lying to her, but to the whole country as well. And she has to make the choice whether or not she wants to be loyal and stand with him or to do what's morally correct and stand against him.
Well, what's his position that he would lie to the country? In other words, is he a corporate executive, a politician, a national leader?
He is a national leader of a country who has been altering history for its citizens, as well as keeping hidden the fact that they could have access to magic.
Okay. And where did your fascination with magic come from to incorporate it as part of this book?
Because we don't have it in real life. It's fantastical, magical. It's something I've always wished kind of existed in the world. And so being able to write where it does exist and where it is real helps me escape from reality.
Well, how much of your book is not an interpretation of, but really inspired by what you mentioned earlier, reading George Orwell's 1984?
So the main dystopian, Big Brother's always watching type is definitely taken from 1984. But the actual story of the father and daughter relationship dynamic and that fight is purely based on the dream and imagination that I have.
When you finish the first novel, then, because it's a series, I'm not going to ask you to reveal the ending. That's up for the readers to enjoy. But I assume that there's not a finite ending at the end of the book, since you are going to be doing the next book and the next book and the next book of that series.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So each of the endings of the books leads to the next one. And I hope trying to make it, because with the second book now fully first draft written, trying to make it so that readers, if they want to pick up the second book and the third book, that they're able to do so and still read the series from that point on without having picked up the previous books.
Sure. Now that the book is out, though, are you showing it to your mother? I'm going back to that again, because you hadn't shown the script or the draft of the book. Has she read the book now?
Yes, she's read the book and she's purchased a few copies. She loves showing it off to her friends.
That's great that she actually bought some copies as opposed to just asking her daughter, the author, for some free copies, which I believe you're entitled to X number of promotional copies to people. That's great. So she's already bought some and she's spreading it around. And then hopefully the people that read it are not just your age, but adults as well that could glean something. Is there, even though there's entertainment in your book, is there also, because again, it's George Orwell, we talked about earlier with 1984 and that dystopian landscape, is there a message within the entertainment, even though it's entertainment, or are you relying primarily on the characters and the action and forget all the other stuff?
I'm relying primarily on the action and the characters to lead the story.
And tell us a little bit about some of the main characters. I know there's the father and there's the daughter. The father is the despot in a way. The daughter is caught between two worlds. It's her father, but at the same time, she knows he's been lying about altering history. Are there other characters that are central to the plot?
Yes, although they don't come up in the first book. The rest of the Arabella family is definitely essential. There's Scarlet Arabella, the wife of Valerius, who ends up in the first chapter, which has been posted on my social media, found out about it and is trying to fight. But unfortunately, things do not go her way.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is the twins, the older brothers of Angelette Arabella, who also unfortunately have some misgivings about their situation.
Of the characters involved that you've written about, who is the most challenging for you? And is it because it's a person that is not your age? And even though it's a totally made up character, it's a different situation. So would you say the main character is the dictator, or was the hardest character the dictator, or was it the daughter or somebody else?
So I think for me, the hardest characters were probably Ivan and Ivis, the twins. Her siblings, because I don't have siblings. I don't have older brothers. I don't have older siblings. So I don't know personally how that connection works, how those relationships really work. I have to rely on psychology and friends that have siblings and their interactions and stories. So they were probably the hardest characters to write and to not make them cliche.
Yes, that's always a challenge. How did you do, or if you did do research, you mentioned talking about friends that may have twins, that type of thing, but did you do any extensive research in turn? Again, you're creating a world and you're creating characters in that world. So it's not like you're writing nonfiction, but at the same time, you need reference points. You can't just rely, I assume, on your imagination alone. There has to be some additional fodder to feed that. So how did you research to write this book?
Yeah, so my biggest research for this book was actually psychologically. I dove into a lot of psychology textbooks while I was still in college to be able to understand the relationship dynamic that Angelette would have with Valerius, specifically because he has such a twisted sense of love, how that would affect her as not only his daughter, but as a young child being raised in that environment. Mm-hmm.
When you were going to college, and I assume you're finished with it now, or are you still?
Yes.
Okay, you're finished.
I graduated December 2024.
Okay, great. Congratulations. It's always good. And when you were going to college, were your classmates aware of your dedication to writing? Or was that something you kept hidden under a hat if you wore a hat, or if you didn't have a hat, maybe just kept hidden some other way?
They were aware of my dedication, but they weren't aware that I was writing the book. Thankfully, my college advisors were amazing, and most, unfortunately for housing in the Huntsville area, don't do 6 month leases. But I was able to get all of my classes online, so I spent the last semester of college back at home.
Oh, so you're doing it online? Okay, that makes sense. How did you work that out from a discipline standpoint and a scheduling standpoint when you're writing a novel or any kind of book? And at the same time, in your case, you're going to college, so you're working on that as well. How did you structure your schedule to be able to pull that all off without going somewhat off the rails?
So for me, I already struggled with keeping track of schedules. So I assigned each subject that I had a specific day of work. So I would, if I had ancient history, that would be Monday, and I would do all of that work on Monday. And I wouldn't do any other work purely because I didn't want to overload myself on schoolwork and get burnt out super easily. So I would assign a day for each type of work.
Well, they talk about writers having a schedule. Some writers, or probably many writers, do the schedule of 2 hours a day or 3 hours a day, a set time each day, etc. Other writers that I've talked to that have been on the show have talked about writing when the spirit moves them, and they do it that way. How were you able to do that with the writing of the book? You scheduled one day out of the week, and that was the whole day, and that's what you did it, just like with your homework?
So I flow when I do writing. I write when I'm in the mood, when I've got the energy and the mental capacities for it. Because there, for me, are some days that I just don't have the energy. And I always felt down when teachers told me that in order to be a good writer, I had to write at least 10 minutes a day. Because sometimes it's really hard for my discipline and my energy to be able to do that. And I couldn't keep up with it.
Yeah, I think that's a misnomer. I know it comes from a good place that people give you that kind of advice. But I think people are so different that what works for somebody, or maybe most people, won't necessarily work for others. And you have to kind of find your pace and your schedule and then stick to that, even if it's when the inspiration strikes. So, for example, if the inspiration strikes, you got to write, because if you don't write, then you're not disciplined. So you have to kind of keep those, you have to keep that all together in that sense.
Yeah.
So when you are writing and you're already planning ahead with the other books as well, are you devoting a certain amount of time while you're writing which you've already written the first book, but are you devoting, while you're writing the first book, a certain amount of time to plotting out the second, third, and fourth books?
So for me, I'm not doing a specific time. I do a specific length. So in writing the second book, I set out to doing a minimum of one chapter a day. If I could get one chapter a day done, then I completed my goal. And most of the time, I far succeeded that. and was doing 2, 4. Sometimes I did 5 chapters a day if I felt really good. But then others, I managed to barely get in one.
But the hard part, I would think, is this. I think it's great that you're able to do that. But at some point, you also have to come back to what you wrote to edit and rewrite before you even get it sent to the publisher. So that's another scheduling situation. Yep. And you have to put on your editing hat and your rewriting hat, which is different from your writing hat. Because the initial flow you talked about is, it flows. But now you're looking at your work and you're going, you know, I shouldn't have said this, or I could add this, or I could change that, or I could delete that. So it's a different kind of approach. And that's it. Did you enjoy that process?
No, I hate going back into my own work and having to edit. Because I'm also the kind of individual that feels like it has to be perfect the first time. And when it's not perfect the first time, it's wrong. And I have to, I mean, I consistently told myself during editing of The Betrayal that no, just because it's not perfect doesn't mean it's not good.
You have to learn those lessons, otherwise you go crazy.
Yeah.
Are you finding that the reception to the book, because it's, again, it's an interesting genre, it's young fiction. So it's designed for a certain audience, but I think others can read it as well. As we talked about that earlier, where other older adults can read it and enjoy it as well. Do you find that your writing of the characters, even though they're fantastical in a sense, and it's fiction, but you put traits into them that relate to real world people?
If that's
the phrase, real world people, I guess.
Yes, absolutely.
That's a better
term. I always say when I write, I break a little piece of myself and put it into every single character I write. So in The Betrayal, every single character that has a name has a little piece of me inside of them.
So that's those little nuggets that you're putting in there.
Yeah.
And do you do it for yourself, or do you do it for the reader, or for both?
For both.
Okay.
One, so that I can relate to the characters, and so that other people can feel the humanity in the characters and the realistic nature of them.
What do you want people to take away from reading your book? That I know it's, as we talked about, it's entertainment, but is there one thing you want them to take away, that it was a fascinating visit to a very unusual place with unusual characters? Or I don't want to put words in your mouth.
There is one quote that I always love, and I really hope people start using it more often, that really relates to the story, that there's 3 sides to every story. There's your side, there's my side, and then there's the truth.
Now, that quote, is that your quote, or is that a quote your book?
No, Robert Evans.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Robert Evans, if it's the one I'm thinking of course, is the famous Robert Evans from Hollywood and Paramount. And
yes.
All of that. Okay, great. So that's good inspiration. Have you met any authors in your time writing, either going to a book signing or to a convention or to publishers' offices, etc.? Have you met other authors that have given you advice or have offered to read the book to, or that you just can get ideas from?
I haven't been out and about as often as I probably need to be. I'm a very closeted introvert. I don't really like going outside, although I know it's something that I have to get done more often.
Minimally, you have to go out for the vitamin D.
Yeah, I do plan on going to Writer's Fest in Nashville, November 21st through the 22nd.
All right, so there, you're breaking out of your shell. That's good.
Yes.
I want to get back to your process of writing for a second, too. How do you do it? There are some people that still write by hand, interestingly enough, and there are other people that write using the old typewriter, and I mean the old typewriter. There's people love that because of the tactile sensation. They're just used to it. Most people, of course, after the typewriter was the word processor, then computers. I'm assuming you simply write on your computer.
Yes, I like to use Google Docs specifically because I like the access of offline, of being able to get it on my phone, on my tablet, on the computer. Even when I don't have Wi-Fi, I can still add notes, jot down something, and not have to pay a subscription service. Because I am a fresh out of college student with debt.
I know what you're talking about. Poverty. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's great. And you're also working as well. So that's good. You're doing a lot of stuff. Do you see down the line now that this first book is out and it's getting a good reaction, do you see down the line when you finish the series that you will go into other kinds of series or other kinds of books and maybe even some nonfiction as well? Or do you like fiction specifically?
I love fiction a little too much to deviate from it. Morgan James had always told me, plan on your next three works. And I looked at them and I said, I'll be one step ahead. I got my next three series. So I've already got the next three series planned out.
Oh, that's great. And do you find that the process of writing itself, because you're creating at the same time you're writing, it's coming from your brain to the computer, and you're creating these characters and these worlds and all this action, do you find that you mentioned flow earlier, is it almost a natural flow to you at this point? In other words, your subconscious clearly is doing a lot of the work. And then when you're sitting down to write, it all flows out there. So do you get that instantaneous, you don't have an audience yet, but it's you on paper or on screen. So do you get that instant feedback of euphoria from just being able to get that stuff out onto the page?
Yes and no. The idea of the story flows very naturally to me, and I can churn it within my head very easily. I struggle with a lot of like descriptions and transitions. So when it comes to actually having to write those, I do struggle, and it takes me some time. But when I do get it down, I can look back at my work and go, okay, yeah, this is decent.
And do you find you enjoy writing dialogue more than the...
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
That might be the case. Yeah, it's good. And before I let you go, one last question, and that is, once you are finished and you've put this book down and you're on to book two, book three, and book four of that series, which is The Lies We Fear, do you see that you will pick up maybe an alternate universe that you'll start a series on, if that makes sense?
So the next series doesn't unfortunately have anything to do with The Lies We Fear, but I do plan on, depending on how long the next series does take to write, I am absolutely opened to doing little short stories, little side stories in the world of The Lies We Fear to keep people kind of intertwined with the world.
I think your next series should be The Outdoors We Fear, or The Outdoors I Fear, which would be your autobiography. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Heather Ogden. Her debut novel, The Betrayal, which is the first in a planned series of The Lies We Fear, is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places, including bookshop.org. And for everything about the book, go to theliesweefear.com, theliesweefear.com, and follow her on Instagram and X. And Heather, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.